You're listening to the Lead 'Em Up Podcast.
Thank you for hanging with us. I'm Adam alongside Leon, as always. And today, Leon, we're going to go a little deep on this topic because this requires some thoughts and there's some processing that jumps in. You know, I heard a quote the other day that really got my attention. I was communicating with one of my mentors, almost like a coach of mine, right? It wasn't a formal setting for our relationship, but it's kind of turned in that dynamic where he kind of coaches me and I love picking his brain, and he challenges the heck out of me. He calls me out on things, gives me a completely different way of looking at things. And it's been such a valuable relationship that he and I have. But he said this little quote the other day that I just want to spend some time in today's episode just kind of unpacking. He said, Adam, you know, you will quickly find when interacting and leading people that most often people will underestimate the pain of the same while overestimating the pain of change. They will underestimate the pain of staying the same, and they will overestimate the pain of change. Now, what are your first thoughts when you hear that quote? We're going to unpack it, but just like, man, right out of the gate, when you hear that dynamic, like, what do you begin thinking about, Leon?
I immediately think about the pain, the pain, because either way, there's going to be pain. But I think this topic is going to be heavy. I think this is going to be one of our best topics this year, man, because once we break this thing down and really get into it, I think we're going to walk away just a little bit differently. But when I immediately hear it, I think about the pain because on both sides, whether you underestimate or overestimate it, the pain is there. So let's dive into it, man. I'm ready.
Yeah. And it kind of came from a place of, you know, we were talking about, you know, we were actually having a conversation about getting more and more people engaged in leadership development holistically, right? Yeah. And getting more teams and organizations pouring into their culture, doing the necessary things to develop their people, develop leadership, develop a thriving culture. And frankly, I brought up something that when he heard it, he said, I totally disagree, Adam. It was a very interesting kind of conversation because I was telling him, I said, you know, one of my big concerns is that I believe people do the best with what they know. And in all fairness to individuals, they may not know what a good culture looks like. They may not know what a thriving, connected team feels like because they maybe have never experienced it. And all they have to kind of gauge and compare is what they see in front of them. And it seems pretty good. But yet that pretty good could actually be pretty bad if it was put in comparison to a thriving culture. But when they compare it against maybe other moderate performing teams, hey, we're pretty good. Right. And in all fairness to them, they're doing the best with what they know. They don't know what greatness looks like. They don't know what ultimate green could look like. And, you know, I've always said, I wish coaches could ride with us, Leon. Yeah. I wish they could ride with us. I wish they could go and see the good, the bad, and the ugly. We've talked about this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, Leon, when you were starting out, you were riding with me, and you saw the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. like night and day.
No names of teams. We don't call out any.
Yeah, of course not, yeah.
I know that you know the one I'm talking about. When you went to the one where you actually like looked around and you asked a question in this group, what did you ask them at the beginning of the session before we started as everyone was just coming in?
Yeah, I asked them straight up, do you guys even like each other? Do y'all know one another? Is this the first time y'all have met? Like, I remember it like clockwork.
Yeah. Everyone's just sitting there doing their own, like no one's interacting. It's almost silent, no chit chat, no banter, no
nothing.
No love when people walked in the room like, oh my God, none of that.
Never seen it before. Never.
But then maybe that same day or maybe the day after, I took you to another school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yeah.
We walked in the door. And what happened?
And I got scared because of the nine clap, right? It was so loud. I didn't expect it. As soon as we walked in, it was like, nine clap, yo. Just totally different.
Let's go. Lead them up. Let's go. And they're vibing and talking and, man, connected. And you can tell there's friendships. And I look at those and we see all of them, right? Doing the work we do. We see the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I try to have empathy for, you know, certain programs, coaches that I'm just like, man, you know, in all fairness, they're just doing the best with what they know.
Yeah.
They don't know what that looks like because they don't get a chance to see that. Because if they saw that, then they'd go back to their team and be like, man, we're missing.
Yeah.
This isn't good, right?
We need to turn it up. Yep.
Mm-hmm. We need to turn it up. Mm-hmm. So I was mentioning how, like, we've got to do a better job just in leadership development and culture work, you know, showing those who may not be in what goodness and richness looks like.
Mm.
Like truly what it looks like. So they can then look at and say, wow, I want that. Wow. I don't have that. So I was talking about that general, you know, that general concept of really trying to cast a vision of what winning looks like, what this thriving, flourishing green culture looks like. And my mentor looked at me and said, that's not the way to go about it.
Mm.
That's not the way to get people to jump in. And I'm like, okay, it seems pretty good on the surface, right? Like my head, I was like, if what I just said felt good, he goes, nope. He goes, and it's not even just my opinion. He's the data research and such shows that's not the approach that'll produce the greatest return. And I said, really? I said, what is it? He said, you have to communicate and cast the vision of how status quo will lead them through the valley of despair in the future. You have to cast the vision of how status quo will lead them into a valley of despair in the future. And I immediately, as he said that, I'm like, okay, bro, you're smarter than me. Slow this down a little bit. What are you saying? And he used a line that he said, listen, people underestimate the pain of staying the same and they overestimate the pain of change. You're asking them to make some changes to create this growth. He goes, it's too intimidating. They're going to look at that pain of changing and overestimate. It's going to be too heavy. It's going to be so bad. You know what? Things aren't broken now. I'll just keep going down the path I'm going. And they will underestimate then in flip side that if I stay the same or just keep going down this path, it won't be that bad.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right. So they underestimate and they go, nah, yeah, I hear what you're saying. That does sound good, but that just seems like a lot. I'm not that bad. We're not in that bad of shape. So I'm just going to stay where I'm at. It's easier. But yet they're underestimating what it could produce.
Yeah.
They underestimate the depth of the valley of despair could actually get into.
Mm.
They underestimate the pain of status quo, the pain of staying the same. Now, there's more to this here. Okay. But that got me stopped in my tracks, Leon.
Yeah.
And we discussed it, you know, we talked about this too, but I mean, you bring this up a lot, consequences.
Yeah.
Consequences produce change. Elaborate on that.
Yeah. Yeah. When you speak about the pain point, the consequences, if I stay here in the red too long, these are the consequences that could happen. And when you start speaking about that, it kind of makes people have a certain level of sense of urgency, right? Sense of urgency to get out of that comfort zone, to get out of that. Because when you just said it, when you said people think of growth being too intimidating, what that is, that's just fear. That's fear. And when you flipped it on the flip side of it, you talked about, you know, when people think that growth, it, you know, it just seems like it's too much. I'll stay here where I am. That's the comfort part. You know, so when you speak about the consequences of comfort, when you speak about the consequences of fear, that's what's going to get people to move. That and it's almost as if it's like people want you to pull them away from pain. They don't want to hear you walk them to the victory, right? They don't want to hear you. I don't care about walking to the victory. I just want you to take away this pain because this pain is what I feel right now. Like the victory, that's way down, that's long down the line. The pain right now is I don't want to focus on winning right now because I got to deal with these parents every day. I got to deal with these challenging, you know, youth athletes every day. Like that's the pain. So I want somebody to pull me away from that, opposed to, you know, thinking about the overall outcome. So, you know, I like the way you broke it down, though, man. That growth being too much, being looked at as if it's intimidating. You know, that's just a certain level of fear.
So you just dropped some nuggets there, man. The consequences of comfort, man. What a great line there. And that is where I think coaches have to wrestle with change in that regard. Yeah. But they've got to wrestle with, like, all right, if I am overestimating change or I'm not willing to change, then what's the consequences of my comfort? Mm. And that is what that gets underestimated, that that comfort is not that bad.
Right.
And that's where you have to really wrestle and actually speak truth to what that comfort actually could produce.
Yeah.
Okay. And, and you know, more often than not, things slowly erode. Okay. Mm. Like teams don't fall apart overnight. They slowly erode, right? Championship DNA does not fall apart overnight. It slowly erodes,
mm-hmm.
right? Leadership connectedness on a team does not fall apart overnight. It slowly erodes. And then this is life, right? Marriages more often than not don't fall apart overnight. They slowly erode.
Yeah.
Right. You know, like health, you may don't become obese overnight. You slowly erode.
Yeah.
Okay. So you have to start painting a picture of what comfort will produce in consequences, you know, and I love that you said more people are interested in, you know, having someone pull you from pain than pushing you to victory.
Yeah.
100%. And it's interesting because when we think about underestimating the pain of staying the same and overestimating the pain of change and really trying to communicate status quo or what that may lead to, that valley of despair, as alluded to by my mentor.
Yeah.
He used a great data point. He said there's a case study where they did an A and B kind of testing in the medical environment that that there were a group of medical patients that were experiencing medical challenges and significantly and dramatically needed to make some lifestyle changes.
Mm-hmm.
And specifically, they needed to work out more, eat healthier, and quit drinking. Okay. Those were the three things that were being suggested by the medical professionals to help with the medical challenges that these patients were experiencing. So the case study A actually had the medical experts communicate that they need to stop drinking, eating unhealthy, and needed to work out more in order to improve their life.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense, right?
Yep.
Start eating healthy, start working out more, and stop drinking. You need to improve your life. You got some challenges going on.
Yeah.
That when presented that way in case study A, it actually produced a 1 in 7 change in the behavior of the patient. 1 in 7. So you're roughly looking at 15%.
Mm-hmm.
15%, despite the, you know, hey, you got these medical challenges, you need to make some changes. 15% did it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting because when you looked at case study B, right, they took the same medical challenges that the patient, because the patients all had the same challenges, but they worded their communication differently. They actually did it through the challenging of the status quo, taking them through the valley of despair and said, I'm just going to give you a quick heads up that if you don't stop drinking, if you don't start working out more frequently, and if you keep eating unhealthy, you are predicted to take off 8 years of your life.
Mm.
That if you move and walk away from this office essentially and don't do a single thing differently than what you're doing now, you will cut off 8 years of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Produced a 6 out of 7 change.
Wow.
85% change.
Yeah, come on. Yeah.
Both parties had medical challenges and complications.
Yeah.
Both would benefit from living healthier. But one simply was a push towards victory. The other one was a casting of vision through their valley of despair and says, if you don't change, this is where you're going to go.
Mm.
And for us, I think there are coaches, there are programs listening right now that change is difficult for people in your life, in your coaching profession, but you have to have a sober conversation with what status quo will eventually get you.
Yeah. Yeah. Pain has to grab their attention. That's so good. Like, it's almost as if something has to hurt in order for change to happen. Something has to like really be painful in order to create that change. Like I think I look at pain as if it creates a certain level of focus. Like as you just went through that statistic, it made them focus more. Oh my goodness. As soon as I heard it, like, I got goosebumps just hearing it. Okay. Let me get my health together. Let me make sure I'm on the right side of statistics. You know, when the cause becomes personal, like that's when, you know, things start to shift, things start to change. You know, you start to care differently.
You know, it's one of these, for example, okay, let's say, I don't know if this is one of the most widely scattered data points on the web, and you can get a variety of different data points. The average tenure of a high school coach these days, what is it? Now, once again, depending on where you read and what you read, and I've read a lot, I've kind of come to the conclusion based on just all the different studies that I've read over the years, it is about a 4 to 5 year tenure that coaches are operating in right now. And that is much lower than what it used to be.
What it used to be, absolutely.
Right? Coaches would stay in it for me.
Yeah.
You know, now they're looking at like a 4 to 5 range. And once again, that can vary based on where you're reading. But I've got a couple of data points or sources that speak around that range. And it makes sense, right? Because when you think about coaching, I mean, you're dealing with a lot, right? It is now an all-year job, not a seasonal job.
Yeah.
Okay. And you don't get paid stipend for all year. You get paid stipend for your season, but are expected to be present all year. It's major time crunch. I mean, a lot of time away from family and stuff like that. You're dealing with parents that can be very challenging. Coaches are having more and more put on their plate of just responsibility, and they've got to monitor the locker room and wait in the parking lot till every kid leaves, and they've got to drive kids home. Like, I mean, there's just so much on the coach's plate these days. Yeah. And sometimes the kids are challenging.
Be honest, yeah.
You know, so when you look at that, and that is kind of capturing an average world of a coach right now.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Now, in the midst of that, they still kind of enjoy what they do. They still have some success. There are still glimpses of excellence. There's still promise and potential for winning in the future. So they're living in this very interesting world of like, yeah, there's still some joy. Yeah, there's tremendous pain and annoyances. But if the studies are right, that there is this 4 or 5 year, man, that's actually something coaches need to wrestle with when it comes to change.
Yeah.
That, and once again, we're just speaking at it from a lead them up standpoint. Hey, coach, man, you need to jump in and build your green team. Mm-hmm. Man, let us come in and help you build that green culture.
Yeah.
Man, let's do it, man. You will love what it does. You know, it'll get player led, all those things, man, it will do all those things. It's going to get you better. It's going to help you lead to winning. And they're like, I just don't know. No, it seems like a lot, you know, like, I just don't know if I can commit to it. It's so busy. And what are they doing? They are overestimating pain of the change.
Pain of change, yeah.
While underestimating the pain of staying the same.
Mm.
But look back at the data point, 4 to 5 years.
Yeah.
4 to 5 years. Hey, coach, hold on. I hear what you're saying. You don't know if you can commit. You don't know if you have to get the time. You don't know if you're ready to jump in. Hey, I'm going to tell you, coach, if you don't, I'm going to tell you, you will be done hanging up your cleats, retired from coaching in 2027. I'm just giving you a heads up. You will be done. Mm-hmm. The joy will be lost. The pain and frustration will take over. The bad will outweigh the good, right? The drain will be more than the build, right? I will go down the path for you. You will be done in 2 years. You think the pain of staying the same ain't great? You want to underestimate it? Watch where it takes you. Look at the studies. Look around to your fellow landscape of coaches. They're all exiting because they aren't experiencing green teams. Right?
You just made the invisible real right there.
I think we have to wrestle with sober reality of what the status quo could lead us to.
Yeah. Come on. You're gonna feel the impact now. You're feeling that. That's the wake-up moment right there. That's the wake-up moment right there. Right there. They're going to feel the impact there. Right? At that point, you take away the excuses. Right? What excuses do you have now? Like, you understand over the next 4 years, I could be out of here. Due to burnout, due to parents, due to the time, due to more responsibilities, I'll be burnt out here in the next 4 years. What are you going to do now? All right? Can we start creating this culture now? Can we cut the excuses now? Right? Cut the calls. All right, let's go. Let's do it now. So, oh, man, that's so good,
and,
man.
And it's a conversation for the ADs as well, Leon, because you look at the AD conversation and it's like, okay, hey, AD, they're constantly putting out fires with their teams. Coach over here in this sport did something, and now AD has to jump in, right? They're fielding emails from the parents because the parents are mad about the coach and the kids playing time and poor communication, and the coach isn't invested. Now, the coach has vacancies all across their athletic program. They're having to fill and hire year after year, you know, fill these vacancies and voids. And it's like, hey, hello, the pain is staying the same. You will be done.
Yeah.
You will literally be counting down the years to retirement, waiting for this ship to just be done with, right? I am done with it. Like, and then that drain and pain will then carry not only to yourself, it'll probably start impacting your health. It'll probably carry over into your home life. Okay. Coach, if we don't start building a green program throughout your athletic program, I see tremendous despair coming in your future, and it'll happen little by little.
How could you not create boundaries at that point? How could you not, like, that? That's the language of someone that should want to actually respond to something like how that fear of that just makes me motivated to, you know, create a solution, find a solution. So,
but we can't lie to ourselves about the reality. The truth. It's fine. It's whatever. It's all right. No, it's not that bad. Come on now. Like, you have to be honest with yourself in order to really face the picture of what reality will look like over time. If it continues to incrementally erode little by little.
That's the word. Yeah. That's the word right there,
man. And you know, I actually think about this in my own life with, you know, It was in 2001 where I went through the Dave Ramsey program.
Oh, yeah, you're telling me. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember the Dave Ramsey program. Yeah. And for those listening, if you're familiar with Dave Ramsey, then you know all about his program. If you're not familiar with Dave Ramsey, he's a financial guy that really helps people just get in kind of better financial standing. And I'm not a Dave Ramsey 100% all in. Generally speaking, especially early on, I think he's got some great principles and all that, but I'm not like, so I kind of joke with my older brother. I'm like Dave-ish, you know, like my brother's Dave all in, right? Like I'm Dave-ish.
Yeah.
But, and it was 2001 timeframe where, you know, frankly, I was looking around financially at kind of where our family was, where I was, where we were. And by no means were we struggling, but we weren't like getting ahead at the level we needed to get ahead. Okay. Yeah. We were literally living status quo, kind of in that paycheck to paycheck, you know, good life, but not great life. I mean, just, you know, just kind of that mid-tier operation. And when you work really hard, you want to see more fruit from the labor.
Yeah.
And there just wasn't enough fruit. And I actually got to the point where I finally began having an honest conversation of what status quo looked like and where it actually would lead us.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, man, if we don't make a change, like, this is going to burn us out.
Yeah.
We're going to get so frustrated for not being able to get ahead. You know, we're going to get so frustrated that we don't have any surplus, you know, that there's no margin. Like, we're just going to get to that place. Mm-hmm. And it was around 2000, 2001 that both my wife and I both kind of began having honest conversations and real sober conversations about what status quo looked like.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I think prior to that, it was kind of like, you just kind of kicked the can down the road.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's fine. You know, we're fine. We're good. Yeah, you're just kicking the can down the road.
Stay where we are. We're good. It's all right.
We're good. And then you look at like, yeah, I'm sure we could get better, but like, oh, then I got to budget, and then I got to be disciplined, and then I got to sacrifice, and then I got to like say no to things I want to say yes to.
Got
to
get all uncomfortable. These different... Yeah. Yep.
And we finally had the honest conversation, and frankly, it changed everything.
Mm.
And it wasn't until I actually began really seeing that like, the status quo will lead us to a place where like it'll burn us out. It'll discourage us. It'll put pressure on us. It'll create tension within us, all these different dynamics. If we were to still be at this pace 5 years from now, if we were still dealing with these conversations 7 years from now, like we had to change. And, you know, it's an interesting conversation just because does winning motivate us? I don't know.
Right. That's a whole nother. It sounds more like fear. Fear motivates us more than winning. A fear of losing. I don't know. That's a tough one, man. That's a tough one.
So like what is the psychology here? Because like, man, hey, listen, I can get you to be a champion. Doesn't necessarily cause people to change. Mm-hmm. But if you say like, if you keep going down this path, you're going to eventually land in this place. Oh man, I better change.
Yeah.
So hold on. The winning didn't motivate you to get there. It was the pain that did. Like, so I wonder if not only do we need to hear this as coaches and leaders, mm-hmm. because I think sometimes we may be reluctant in resistance of change because we are overestimating the change and underestimating what staying the same will look like.
Yeah.
So one, do we need to hear this, but I also think this principle can be then incorporated into our messaging to our team.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Right.
For sure.
Hey, if this practice intensity level that we've been experiencing over the last 3 days, if it continues, this is where it'll lead us. And I don't know if we have that intensity spectrum teaching.
Yeah, that, you know exactly where I was going. Intensity spectrum. When you think about it, when we map this thing out, and I'm not sure if this is actually in the curriculum.
It's year three, so it's not in the everyday curriculum. So only a few know of it, but you got to work your way up to that point.
Yeah,
it's,
coaches,
it's so good.
Coaches, when you get to year three, you are going to love intensity spectrum. It's just a path of leading your team down those consequences, you know. And whenever we do intensity spectrum, it's 9 times out of 10, you know, for me personally, whenever I do it, it's always correct. I don't think I've never had a moment where it was wrong, but it's just leading
your team. You're absolutely right.
Down the path of getting them to understand that where they are right now is not enough to get them to that next level, right? And I don't want to go too deep into detail of what intensity spectrum is, but it's a full-blown layout of understanding where you are and where you need to be. And look, we're going to go through the consequences of if we do not change this intensity level, if we don't change our effort, if we don't change, you know, how we're engaging with one another, how we're leading one another up. If we don't change, these are the consequences. This is what can happen. And man, every single time I've done it, my team has predicted their future. It is powerful.
And that's the term. It is the predictor of your future, the intensity spectrum, but it actually paints the picture of this message. The pain is staying the same. Yeah. It says, so essentially you have to, the players in the team grade their average intensity level at practice during the course of a season on a grading scale of A, B, and C, D, and E. They grade it B minus, C plus, things of that nature. It then gets put into this formula of sorts, the spectrum, and it will. And then you rank your opponents and all your different matchups on the season ranking, and where you score yourself. There's this formula. It's a 3-level jump formula. It will actually predict your ceiling for your season. And it is so accurate. It's so accurate. And it basically tells the story. In fact, now that we're recording this, this will be the language.
Yeah.
That I'm going to actually like, I'm going to use that underestimating the pain of staying the same. Overestimating the pain of change. Like this is the language we need to incorporate into it, Leon. And because I mean, and I had a group, listen, I'll share this the other, one of my recent championship teams, Calvert Hall Boys Lacrosse, fantastic team and had an incredible season, ended up making a run to win the MIAA championship, which arguably kind of the top high school lacrosse conference in the country. And Calvert Hall was able to finish the season ranked number one in the nation. Big compliments and shout out to them. But man, there was a 2-game losing streak in the middle of that season. One of which, one of your teams, Leon, and that game that I went to when they lost, you know, they did not execute. They did not bring the energy in our teaching of the mixing board. They did not have bass or treble. Their mixing board was unplugged and it was very, very poor. And they lost 2 in a row. And we ended up going and doing the intensity spectrum with them the day after. I ended up filming something and recording it because I couldn't get there. And oh my gosh, it couldn't have played out anymore. I basically had them all grade where their current intensity They were at a B. I said, this is where it'll take you. And it was literally to the point. It showed them exactly who they won, who they lost, where they're going to go in their future. And it mapped it out and it showed them, if you stay the same, here's your despair. Mm-hmm. You will bounce in the first round of the playoffs. You will. And the prediction was, mm-hmm. you will barely get into the playoffs. You will squeak into the playoffs because not everyone makes the playoffs. You will get bounced out in the first round. Mm-hmm. That's what will happen if you don't make a change. And based on all the other data points up until that point, they had no reason not to believe me because every other point was accurate. I said,
accurate. Yep.
Let me guess. We won that one. Yes, we did. By mm-hmm. a wider margin. Yep. Okay. Next game. I bet we won that one with a slightly smaller margin. Wow. Yeah, that's true. This one, I bet we barely squeaked by. Yes, that's true. This one, we came up short. Yes, that's true. Exactly. Because there's your landing spot and here's where it'll take you. And they made changes. Shout out to them. All credit to them. Yeah. They never lost from that day forward.
Wow.
A plus level intensity, connectedness, focus, dialed in, made a run through the toughest conference. Had some miracle wins, some incredible wins against incredible teams. Yeah. But that, frankly, that urgency that flipped in them was the pain of communicating the status quo and how it will lead them into a valley of despair. Wow. And coaches, what does that look like for you? Are there things you're not changing, jumping into, making the adjustments individually, collectively as a coach, with your programs, with your teams? Because you're, frankly, overestimating the pain of change while underestimating the pain of status quo. And is there an opportunity for you also to kind of take that language with your team and infuse that to maybe create more urgent change within your players? What will that look like? And use that little breakdown to help to simply get into the minds of your team and the minds of your coaches and the minds of yourself. Really, really powerful. It's certainly been a thought-provoking theme that we've been wrestling with for quite some time. Leon, anything you want to add before we wrap up?
Man, this is so good. This is so good. I'll just leave with a final thought, man. What comfort won't teach, consequences often will. Mm-hmm. And so I encourage all my coaches to lock in and really start, you know, wrestling with, you know, the consequences of, you know, just going down that same path and, you know, just lean in and dial into what we're doing here at Lead 'Em Up, because it can help your culture and it can take you to that next level. So consequences move people. Let's get it. Let's go.
Let's get it. Leon, appreciate you. As always, I'm Adam. He is Leon. On behalf of the entire Lead 'Em Up team, until next time, we are out.